Shogger, how are you?
I'm doing well today, pal. How are you? It's a beautiful Friday.
You didn't respond to any of my texts yesterday telling you the scores. It's very rude of you.
You know what? It was painful because I don't know how it slipped. I knew the score of the game on my way back from my kids' practice, and I was like, I can't do it. I cannot sit down and watch even PBR, an hour and a half of hockey where I know the score. I can't do it. So last night, I buckled. I didn't do it. Then I got up this morning, I watched a bunch of highlights, and then put the game on while I was working. And I watched a bunch of the first period, and then a bunch of the comeback, and then obviously, it was too much. I just couldn't do it.
It's understandable. I just want to know how to slip out. You looked. You couldn't put your phone down. That was the problem.
Notifications on your phone and all that. So it was, but I mean, nonetheless, you really just got to look at the box score to know what happened. You know, the Penguins came out, played reasonably well, and got up a bunch of goals on the Oilers, and then they fell asleep, and the Oilers came back, and then mistakes, like similar, familiar mistakes come back and bite them in a game they had a chance to steal, and that's all she wrote.
Let's talk a little bit about Justin Schultz.
Sure.
And, you know, his development, and maybe the risk management factor in his game. I think the number one thing that people need to recognize is, when he's not forced to have to play the tough competition, he can at least somewhat tread water. But now that Petrie's gone, and when you put Justin Schultz in situations he's just simply not capable of defending, you're going to have issues.
Yeah, for sure. And, what kind of a defenseman is he going to end up being, right? There's a few different types of defensemen that can produce points. There's guys who you can put them out there, and it doesn't matter who they're out there with. They're going to be reliable and still find a way to produce their points, and they're the anchor on their pairing. And you can play them with anybody. There's guys out there that are like that. PK Subban is becoming that player, has been for the last year or two. And then there's another type of offensive defenseman. It's the kind of guy who you gotta have him with the right partner, because you can't necessarily trust him. You can't necessarily just have him out there with anybody. And to me, Justin Schultz is, and I don't know if this is going to change, he's the kind of guy the Oilers are going to have the right partner for moving forward. He's not going to be that defenseman who you can put him out there with whoever and you know he's going to be okay. The risk management in his game is still not very good. He's still making the same kinds of mistakes that he was earlier in his career when we were talking about it. And that's what you get when you want an offensive defenseman. Sometimes they mature through it and they become more reliable from a risk management standpoint. I don't really see it happening with Schultz.
Like, Schultz to me is a player who there's still some onus on him to improve, no doubt, right? I think there has to be kind of a realization of what he's going to be, right? And he's yet to show us, Ryan, that, you know, he'll really be that competitive guy in tough situations. I think he's gotten a little bit better, but he's just, you know, he doesn't have the edge of a Keith or a Doughty. Not saying he's like those guys, but you know what? So to me, if you don't have that edge, I don't think you can play in the top pair.
I would agree.
I don't think you can.
I think he's a complementary type defenseman. Like, in no way is this a cornerstone player. He's just not. He's not in his presence. Even in the locker room, he doesn't seem to be. He certainly isn't with his play. He's just a good, decent, complimentary defenseman. You need to find other cornerstones. And I believe the Oilers are really banking that Oscar Klefbom is going to become a cornerstone defenseman for them. That there'll be a day where they hand Oscar Klefbom a $6 million contract. I think the Oilers are banking on that happening. And it's a few years away, but I think that's how they view Klefbom. He is that franchise cornerstone guy. I believe that's the way they look at him.
Yeah, well, and I don't discount that either, right? I think, and if Schultz, you know what, if he's your second pairing guy and your power play specialist, or maybe he's Mike Green, right? Who was that for a bit, and then later in his career is the third pairing power play guy.
Yeah, but the point is you have to surround him with the right people. I mean, what has Washington won? Right, Mike Green's been an important player on that team, a cornerstone type player on that team. Like, they need to put the right people around him and not rely too heavily on him to do too much. So there's nothing wrong with that. Not everybody can be your fearless leader. There's roles for everybody to play, But if the Oilers are needing to put Justin Schultz, if they don't have a good enough decor that in a tight game they can pull him off their second pairing and go with a more defensive specialist, and if they don't have a good enough blue line where they can use him the way they need to use him, then they're not going to be winning. If it's Justin Schultz or bust, they're going to be in trouble.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Rashog Report brought to you by the Golf Den. And when you look, like, do you think Klefbom, where he's at right now in his career, is he not better suited to be paired maybe with Mark Fain next year? Is that as your pair of guys who can take the tougher minutes?
Well, that's just it, right? Klefbom, like, what do you want Klefbom to be? Do you want to ask Oscar Klefbom to be the anchor on a D pairing with Justin Schultz and say, okay, Oscar, all of, 70 or whatever it is NHL games, say, hey, you need to be the defensive conscience for this other guy who we're also trying to develop. You make a great point that to develop Oscar Klefbom into what you want him to be, I don't know that you can keep playing him with Justin Schultz, who is still, they're still figuring out what he's going to be. I think they would do Oscar a big favor by putting him with a stabilizing figure that can allow Oscar to focus on playing defense, but having a reliable partner, not being in scramble mode all the time, covering for another guy. They need somebody to mentor Oscar, not have him be a defensive conscience on a pairing. It's like, why doesn't he get the benefit of a veteran presence? Why does he all of a sudden have to be that responsible guy? It's almost not fair to him. To develop these guys properly, you don't just throw them into the deep end and say, do it. You give them an opportunity to learn. You put them in a position to succeed. And Klefbom's playing well, and I think he's doing reasonably well, but I agree with you. Ideally, you put him in a position where he can be the younger guy on that pairing and where the other guy's going to cover up for him a little bit. His play will look and probably feel better.
Martin Marinson, what do you make of his play lately?
He kind of shied away from blocking that shot that Crosby took on the power play last night. I didn't love that. Like, if you're going to block a shot. Like, go get in front of it. These guys know how to do it, right? They know how to do it. They've done it enough. You know the one I'm talking about where they threw it across the ice and he was a D-man that pinched up to get in the way, and he just kind of, he didn't pigeon. He kind of went down on one knee and sort of turned away. I would have liked to have seen a more aggressive shot block there in that moment. He had coverage behind him. He would have been fine if he committed a little bit more. So I didn't love that.
What did you think of Derek Roy's play on the Downey goal?
Derek Roy's play, is that where he was on the 2-on-1?
No, it was the 4-on-4, right? I mean, it was 4-4, and then Edmonton had tied the game. Right, and it was kind of a 2-on-2. I wouldn't say it was 2-on-1.
Yeah,
and Roy
was
there
with defense, though, right?
Yeah, but it's 2-on-2.
Yeah, it was no good. But I mean, you ended up with, it was he and Ollie, wasn't it? Backing up.
Yeah, but he had the guy right in front of the net. Yeah, he had the guy right in front of, like, he's right on Downey. I just think veteran guy there, like, to me, those small plays are what this team historically hasn't made over last time, where you've got a guy, and you know what? If you're working Downey over so hard and he still beats you, then you tip your hat to him and say, great play by Downey. But Edmonton sometimes doesn't make life where, when you look at the Oilers and what they have to fend off to score goals, I just don't see them usually meeting that bar of the price they have to pay to score compared to what the other team has to do.
Well, that's just it, though, right? You've got Derek Roy as your third line center, right? So you've got a guy that's 5 foot whatever. I mean, this is about having a team that has more players on it to play the game harder. And that's why when people talk about should they bring Derek Roy back, well, How many smaller guys that don't make those hard plays can you allow in your lineup at any given time? That speaks to the makeup of the team. I agree with you. Not a hard enough play. Not hard enough to play against. So you get more and more of those plays creeping in. And if that's the kind of player you keep employing. So they don't need a small center in that position. Ideally, I would take a guy with a little bit less offense. Not that Derek Roy's got a ton, but a guy that will make that hard play because they'll be able to have offense on the wings. So it's about the makeup of the team. And the more guys you put into a lineup that will err on the side of you know, not even err on the side of, just not be as hard to play against. It just all adds up to that kind of stuff over and over. And as long as I've been doing this show, man, we've been talking about these sorts of mistakes by guys that aren't hard enough to play against.
Exactly. Shogger, your buddy, Joe Thornton. Hey, you're not even number one on his list of guys he doesn't like in hockey anymore.
You've dropped down now to
Doug Wilson. I'm not sure if you saw the Doug Wilson, what he said, but David Polak, the beat reporter in San Jose, just came out with his article, and the exact quote from Thornton, I think Doug just needs to shut his mouth. I think that's the bottom line. All I've got to say is I've been here every day working hard. I haven't taken a sabbatical. He just needs to stop lying, shut his mouth. Like, there's clearly a dissent amongst those two.
Well, it's gone so sour, it's unbelievable. And you know what? I read Wilson's comments, and if you read further down, to me, the worst one wasn't even the one that got a lot of the play. And I'm going to kind of misquote him because I don't have it right in front of me, but the spirit of it was, he thinks their leadership has been better without a captain this year than it was last year. So he's basically saying he thinks that their team is better off from a leadership standpoint this year than they were last year with Thornton as captain. And then he goes, that's not to disparage Joe. Like, heck, it's not. Give me a flipping break. It's not to disparage Joe. You just punched him right square in the face publicly. And then to sort of flip it off like, oh, I'm not saying anything bad about the guy. We're just way better off without him as captain. Like, give me a break. So, you know what? Doug Wilson's made his own bed here, as far as I'm concerned. It's a really sensitive topic when you start ripping letters off of a guy. Like, it sucks. It happened to me back when I was playing Bantam Rep, and I had an A pulled off of me because an older guy ended up on the team. I'm 14 years old. I was devastated, like, crushed. Can you imagine what it's like? And they've done this twice now. Twice now, they have very publicly ripped letters off of veteran players, important players in their organization's shoulders. And then they think, like, it's not going to be a big deal or it's not going to affect them. And then they go chirping publicly about it. Like, doing it is enough of a statement. I agree with them. Shut your mouth. Don't talk about it. It's bad enough as it is. If anything, back your players up and say less. I don't blame Joe one bit for saying what he said. Do you?
No, I don't have a problem with it at all. It shows to me that there is, you know, this has been a simmering feud behind the scenes. Now that it's come up, one of them has to go. And, you know, Joe Thornton maybe this will force him to waive his no clause and that no movement clause. Yeah. And maybe that's what Wilson's trying to get done here. But I wonder.
Maybe it'll be Doug Wilson.
Well, you wonder, is the GM and the coach going to go in San Jose if they miss the playoffs this year? Who knows?
Maybe it'll be that duo. You know what, Ed? I don't know the ownership situation, like how close they all are. I don't know the relationships at play. But when you've spent that many years spending a lot of money on a team and unable to punch through to a final, have they made a conference final? I can't even remember. But to not be able to punch through, I mean, that's a recipe for it. And if they miss the playoffs now, or if they say they go out in the first round, it just might end up being Doug. If you want to trade the player, fine. You know what? Talk to him. Try and figure out a way to make it work. If the player doesn't want to go, well, tough luck. You're the one that signed him to a deal that had a no trade attached. You got to live with that. So then to try and embarrass him and make his life miserable because he won't go, well, you're the guy that signed the other end of that deal. So it's just, to me, it's two-faced and it's no good. And I don't blame Joe Thornton for being really, really pissed off. But the funny thing is that, like, so many players around the league probably couldn't imagine saying something like that publicly about their general manager.
Yeah, they'd love to.
The GM is the guy who, like, that guy's in control of your world. He runs your life. He gets to say whether you come, whether you go, how much money you make. There's just reverence and respect for the most part, right, publicly. How comfortable is a guy that he can sit in his stall and blast out that at the general manager of the hockey club? How comfortable is that guy to sit there and say that about a GM? You never hear a guy say something like that about his own GM.
I'm still laughing, no offense, that a coach in Bantam stripped a kid of his a letter off his jersey.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Seriously.
Actually, no, it was first year midget. I was a first year player playing AAA midget. And we had a second-year guy come back like 2 months into the season, and they ripped my A and gave it to him. I was crushed.
It's too funny. Shocker, have a good weekend. We will.
Okay, buddy, you too. We'll talk to you next week from Florida.
Oh, yes. Sure. Hey, buddy, put some sunscreen on, okay? I don't need you getting burnt out there, all right? Pasty.
Thanks for looking out for me.
Hey, buddy, that's what we do. We're a family. Take her easy.
Yep.